From WNYC Studios, this is The Sporkful. It's not for foodies, it's for eaters. I'm Dan Pashman. Each week on our show, we obsess about food to learn more about people. You know, the military is not exactly known as a place to find a good meal. But the people who serve there are trained to overcome any obstacle. Gabe DeMayo was on a ship during the first Gulf War.
One of the sailors on the ship said, "Listen, take a piece of bread with you. You know, as we're going through the chow line, take a piece of bread with you." And I'm like, "Why would I need a piece?" He goes, "Trust me, take a piece of bread and watch what I do." So we go through the chow line and watch what he's doing. He took a piece of bread and put it under his tray. So the rocking of the ship, so a lot of the guys, when the ship moved, all their trays slid off the tables and onto the floor. My tray never slid off the table, and I was able to enjoy a meal.
A while back, we put out the call for your tales of eating in combat, and you responded. From stories of meals that came at just the right moment.
It was probably the best prime rib and steak I'd ever had.
To the extreme things people in the military do for a decent dinner.
You know, these 50-gallon oil drums, they'd cut it in half and weld a barbecue.
To, yes, grenades deployed in service of a good meal. All while dealing with the reality that no matter how good the food is.
You know, you have guys with artillery pointed at you still.
As we observe Veterans Day here in the U.S. this week, we have some amazing stories for you. Let's start with Charles Hedrick. He was a Marine corporal during the first Gulf War in Operation Desert Storm.
I was young and looking for action, and the commanding officer was talking about setting up volleyball tournaments with neighboring units and things like that, and I just said, this is not what I signed up for. Platoon commander came back and said, "Hey, we've got an opportunity. We need some people to go up north," which would have been closer to where things were happening. I said, "Great, send me." I didn't really care what I was going to be doing. I just wanted to go.
And what were you hoping for?
Something with some action.
But like, am I correct speaking here as a civilian who does not have any experience in the military? All these words you're using are basically euphemisms for like you wanted to be closer to where things were blowing up.
Yes, yeah, I wanted to get into combat.
Okay.
That was what I wanted.
Charles didn't know what he was volunteering for, but he didn't care. He knew it was closer to combat. His good friends Rob and Scott joined him. They were driven to a spot in the desert along with a giant metal box. Picture one of those shipping containers you see on a freight boat or the back of an 18-wheeler without the wheels. They called it the Connex box. It had no electricity, no running water, no communication, just some cots and a bunch of prepackaged meals. And they were left there, in the desert, just them in the box.
They dropped us off. They told us that there was another Marine unit that was about a mile away from us and that they had water and that we would get our water from them and we were to await further instructions.
Literally, the vision, like I'm picturing this like the scene in Star Wars when they're walking through the desert and there's just nothing. There's nothing in any direction but sand.
Yes, that's exactly right. Except there's more terrain in that desert, in the fictional desert. This was just flat like a basketball court that ran from horizon to horizon made out of sand.
What were you thinking?
Well, I was young. I wasn't thinking about it too deeply. I knew that I was getting closer to the action. The air war had kicked off by then, so there was lots of bombing going on that we could hear, and you could see lots of aircraft flying overhead on their way to bombing Iraqi targets. And that was it. That was good for me.
Pretty soon, they settled into a routine. Walking to the unit a mile away for water, taking turns standing guard at night while the others slept, and talking about home.
I missed my grandmother's Sicilian cooking. I missed the local flavors of New Mexico. I missed the comfort of sitting down and having a plate and a glass. Everything associated with food, from the processes of sitting down to a meal to the associations with family and things like that, I missed all of it.
After a couple weeks, Charles and his friends heard a rumor from some of the guys at the base where they were getting water.
there were some civilians nearby that liked Americans, and they were set up to do laundry, and that we could go up there and potentially do some laundry. Rob, of course, wanted to go. He was kind of a swashbuckling kind of guy. Scott was game with that. I was a little bit more hesitant. The idea of marching off into the sand, not knowing where we were going and not knowing what we were going to find, was not terribly appealing.
Why not? I mean, I can sort of understand, but like, can you explain it to me? Like, what exactly were you thinking?
It felt vaguely against the rules, as well as just going off into the unknown. So we loaded up our backpacks with dirty laundry, got our helmets and body armor and weapons and ammo and all that.
But just to be clear that I understand, you're in the middle of this, you're living in a metal box.
Yes.
In the middle of the desert.
Yeah.
Where, and in all directions, you can see nothing but just sand going up, flat sand.
Yep.
To the horizon.
Yeah.
And using only a compass and a rumor.
Yeah.
You just started walking.
Yeah. Must have been a pretty good rumor.
The thought must have crossed your mind, like, this could get me killed.
Yeah, sure. Right. But I was young and didn't have a wife and kids and didn't have all of that. So
you didn't feel like you had a lot to lose.
No. Right, exactly. This was the experience that I had signed up for. I was going to let it take me where it would. Out of the sort of wind-blown haze, we saw some buildings, and they were like double-wide trailers, mobile homes. Once we saw it, we all kind of came to the conclusion, well, this must be it.
Did it occur to you that it could be a mirage?
No. I always had imagined mirages as being something more pleasant.
than a trailer.
This was, right.
Well, yeah. When you're coming from a metal box, Charles.
That's true.
A trailer seems pretty extravagant.
But it was by no means welcoming. There were the windows that faced us were blocked off or had foil on the inside of them. So it just was not a welcome-looking place.
So you get up to this trailer, this double-wide trailer. Can you see inside at all?
No.
You can't see inside. And are there any people out in front of it?
No.
Do you hear anything?
No, just the wind. And there's this building. And there was a door.
Was there part of you that consider the possibility that maybe the people, if there are people inside this trailer, they might not be your friends?
Well, there was that context, too, in that we were Americans in a foreign country.
Well, and you're also carrying giant guns.
Yes.
I just can imagine 100 different things, 100 different ways that this interaction could go wrong, and it could end up going really wrong.
I was feeling all of those different frequencies of apprehension at that time.
Was there any discussion amongst you guys before knocking on the door?
Yeah. Is this it? This doesn't look right. Or yeah, it could be kind of that back and forth. So we decided that Rob was going to be our spokesman and that he should go ahead and knock at the door, which he did. And there was a long enough pause that I thought, well, all right, that's enough. Let's nobody home. Let's get turned around and go back to the Connex box. But then the door opened, and there was a gentleman in there, kind of an older man, and he looked at us like, who the hell are you?
I gotta say, if that were me, I'd be hightailing it back to my metal box in the desert. But that's not what Charles and his friends did. Stick around to hear what happens, and to hear many more of your combat anecdotes. Time for a quick podcast recommendation. Check out Maeve in America, hosted by Irish comedian Maeve Higgins. Maeve always dreamed of coming to the U.S., but now that she's gotten here and experienced this soul-crushing election cycle, she thinks it's time for a different kind of conversation about immigration. On her show, she'll be telling people's stories of starting a life here, sometimes funny, sometimes maddening, sometimes beautiful. Maeve in America launches November 22nd. A trailer's up now. Get it wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome back to The Sporkful from WNYC Studios. I'm Dan Pashman. Let's get back to the story of Charles Hedrick. To recap, Charles and his friends Rob and Scott are standing outside a trailer in the middle of the desert, in a war zone. They'd heard a rumor that the people in the trailer were friendly to Americans and would let them do laundry. But it was starting to look like maybe going there had been a huge mistake. The guy who answered the door did not seem happy to see them.
Rob is trying to communicate with this guy. It's not going really well. The guy is looking at us with a furrowed brow and kind of shaking his head and eventually closes the door on us. Immediately, there's a fast discussion between the three of us. Okay, what's going on? What's he doing? I think he's telling us no. I think he's saying wait here. And so we're going back and forth with this. Then the door opened back up and there was a man in there. He looked, I would guess, to be about 40 years old, between 15 and 20 years older than we were at the time. He looked to be a very fit, military-looking guy, short hair, and door flies open. He looks out at us and takes us in with a glance and then immediately smiles and says, hello. And he's speaking with a very thick British accent.
When the door opens a second time.
Yeah.
And he opens his mouth and you hear a British accent.
Yeah.
Was there some degree of relief?
Sure, yeah. I mean, there was some relief, but there was a lot of residual doubt. Like, okay, what is this guy doing here? Why is there a British guy here? Why is this structure here?
Charles, Rob, and Scott went into the trailer. The British man explained that the people living there were former Royal Navy guys. They were working for a company that services offshore drilling rigs. He told Charles and his friends that they were welcome there, that they could do their laundry, whatever they wanted. But Charles was still nervous. He and the guys took turns showering and guarding each other's guns. Then the British guy took them on a tour of the complex.
We saw their big lounge with lots of recliners, and then we walked by their mess hall. Immediately, I smelled wonderful food, Indian spices, curries, things like that. I was immediately focused on the food part. I really couldn't wait to sit down and eat some proper food because it had been a long time since I'd had a decent meal.
And do you remember, I mean, that first plate of food, you bring it to the table, you sit down. What were those first couple of bites like?
Well, one of the best meals I've ever had in my life. There was pans of curried chicken thighs or chunks of chicken, potatoes, and some kind of a tomato-y and curried sauce with peas in there. Then they also had these giant fried potato wedges that our hosts called chips. I thought it was kind of incongruous, these fried potatoes with this Indian food, and they said, well, we like our chips with every meal. So there was the eating of this wonderful food, but then also the relaxation that was coming with it, withdrawal of the anxiety. It was excellent.
It's interesting that you said that you felt relaxation finally sort of set in. I mean, is it possible that in the lead up to going out to find this place and getting in the door and, you know, getting to this point of this meal, maybe you were more on edge than you realize?
Totally, yeah. Yeah, I think that in looking back on it now, as I went through this process of leaving school and going on to active duty and then getting trained up and then deploying overseas, it was like boiling a lobster gradually, right? I mean, the water temperature kept raising and raising, with the water temperature being my level of anxiety, of sort of ambient stress. So this was an opportunity to shed all that. And food is a very comforting thing. It has powerful emotional effects on people. And this was one of those times when food was the catalyst to a much better state of mind.
After that day, Charles, Rob, and Scott kept going back to that trailer. They became friends with the British guys. That went on for a few weeks.
And the war was over. It was time to start retrograde, as they call it, going back down to where we came from and heading back to the States.
And did you leave feeling like you had seen the action you came to see?
Certainly not. Nope. Mm-mm.
Is it fair to say that your encounter outside that trailer, banging on that door, waiting to find out what would happen, was the most intense action you saw?
Let's see. In terms of generating anxiety, personal anxiety, yes, that would have been it.
Charles says in the years since all that happened, he's lost track of Rob and Scott, but he has a message for them.
The Marine Corps birthday is on 10 November. It's a very big deal. It's a time when you tell all Marines happy birthday on that day. So, yeah, happy birthday to Scott and Rob out there, wherever they are.
Like I said, we put the call out to those of you who are veterans asking for your stories of memorable meals in combat. And we got some amazing responses. Clearly, people in the military will go to great lengths to accomplish a goal. And one of the toughest enemies in the fight for deliciousness in combat is MREs, meals ready to eat. They're prepackaged meals that troops take into the field, and they last forever. Of course, any food that never goes bad usually doesn't start out being very good. But our brave men and women in uniform will not be denied.
I found out right away at West Point that I could make a little peanut butter and M&M sandwich out of my cracker, which isn't the healthiest of things, but when you're really hungry, it is delicious.
Most of the tricks involved mixing menus. So you get like the Thai chicken mixed with peanut butter, so you get sort of the peanut sauce angle.
That was former Army Captain Stephanie Bolio, who served in Iraq in 2003, and Quill Lawrence, who spent about 10 years reporting from Iraq and Afghanistan for NPR. Of course, it's easy to make fun of MREs. It's low-hanging fruit, right? But as Stephanie and Quill point out, everything is relative.
MREs are one of those things that you can't eat on a regular day. You have to be in that situation where it's the only food that you have, and you know that it's the only food that you have, so it just makes it taste a little bit better.
In northern Iraq, Kurds who were cooperating with U.S. Special Forces in 2003, they thought MREs were just the coolest thing ever. They just couldn't believe that the Americans had figured out this way to get a meal. Now, I mean, they didn't care that it wasn't a very delicious meal, let's say. But, you know, for these guys who'd been rebels for many, many years, their method was to have a big bucket of rice and a big bucket of beans that you just shove your hand into and cram some in your mouth. That was if you had time to cook it all.
So let's not throw too much shade on MREs. And don't underestimate the power of any meal when you're in combat. Stephanie says when they opened the first Burger King in Baghdad, she waited in line for 2 hours, and it was the best burger of her life. And she doesn't even like Burger King. For other troops I heard from, the meals they most remembered were the ones that they cooked themselves. George Hanley served in Vietnam. Back then, they had their own ways of scoring good food.
Every once in a while, a couple cases of steak would fall off the truck, if you follow me. And you know, these 50-gallon oil drums, they'd cut it in half and weld a barbecue. And we'd go up on the roof of the French villa, if you can picture this, and then we'd scrounge up several cases of beer. And we had a major who, man, he made the best baked beans ever. And so we'd have the steak and the baked beans and the beer. Are you kidding? It was fabulous.
I got a great email from Frank in upstate New York. His uncle, John Cacase, served in the Pacific Theater in World War II. And Uncle John hated the rations he was given. So he would take a hand grenade and detonate it into a pond. Then the concussive blast would kill some fish and they'd float to the surface. Then Uncle John would wade out into the water and collect the dead fish and cook them. His supervising officer got a little worried. First, he was worried about Uncle John's health because he wasn't eating the rations. But then he was also concerned about a bunch of missing grenades. Thankfully, when Uncle John explained what was happening, the senior officer was okay with it. And Frank says now that's a classic Uncle John story that the family still talks about to this day. And so many of you who got in touch talked about the importance of your families back home. One really big way that families support loved ones in combat is with care packages.
I once received an entire case of Girl Scout cookies from my mom. We are still eating MREs, 3 meals a day. That was the best present I've ever received in my life. Not only did I have unlimited supply of Thin Mints, but I was able to trade boxes of Girl Scout cookies for things like, hey, here's some money, go stand in the hour-long line for me because I need more shampoo.
That's Stephanie Bolio again. And here's Gabe DeMayo. You heard from him at the very start of the show. He was the guy with the slice of bread under his tray.
I remember getting a box full of oranges from my godfather. He lived in Florida. So you open up, and we hadn't had fresh fruit. You know, we had canned peaches and canned pears for a long time. But to get fresh oranges, it was like manna from heaven, right? So we had the oranges. And then I got a care package, I remember, from my mother and my grandmother, and that had Italian food, you know, food from my youth. That was everything from, you know, sharp provolone to soppressata to salami. It was a taste of home.
Gabe says that taste of home can be especially meaningful around the holidays.
We had Thanksgiving dinner, and they really did it up for the troops. Everybody got turkey and mashed potatoes and sweet potatoes.
How did that meal feel in that situation?
Well, you know, it was weird because everybody's sort of in their uniform, sort of relaxed, but you have guys with artillery pointed at you still. But, you know, it's the food that brings you back home.
Peter Gutierrez was in the Army, Navy, and Marines. He served in Iraq in 2003, and he remembers spending Christmas there.
We were one of the lucky battalions to actually get prime rib and steak meal with a baked potato, green beans, all the good fixings. And, it was the first solid, real piece of meat that I had in my mouth for a good 6 months. It was probably the best prime rib and steak I'd ever had. It makes you miss home in one respect, but also makes you very glad that you are eventually going home to something. It was heavenly. It was divine.
Thank you to all the veterans who shared stories in this week's show. You heard us talk a little bit in this episode about MREs, meals ready to eat. Well, if you want to experience MREs in all their glory, I'm going to send one to one lucky Sporkful listener. If you want to enter to win, you just have to be on our email mailing list. If you're already on the list, you're already entered into this and all of our contests. You must be on the list by Monday, November 28th at noon Eastern Time. You can sign up right now. Go to sporkful.com/newsletter or text SPORKNEWS to 69866. This show is a production of WNYC Studios and The Sporkful. It's produced by Ann Sani, Shoshana Gold, and me. Our engineers are Chase Culpin and Jason Isaac at WNYC and Roman Garcia at KUNM. Music help from Black Label Music. Special thanks to Paula Schumann. Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman.
And I'm Matthew Kirtman from On a Road Trip Across America, reminding you to eat more, eat better, and eat more better.